I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by the supporters of patreon.com/DanLessac. And if you enjoy this podcast, you should consider becoming a supporter of patreon.com/DanLessac. This will not be the last time you hear the phrase patreon.com/DanLessac in this podcast. Enjoy!
What up, guys? It's your boy. That's not how I talk at all. Welcome back, episode 29 of Falling Forward with Dan Lessac. Dan Lessac, that's me. Well, we should just call the podcast I Digress, because although it's meant to be a conversation betwixt creators, generally it just goes off into a rambling mess. And you know what? It's good for that, guys. It's good. How have you been? What have you been up to? The most important question is, have you tweeted yet? Yeah, you should have tweeted about the show. You've been listening 30 to 40 seconds by now. So your tweet should be sent. I will be checking. I will search and make sure I've seen the tweet. And every one of you will get a little like if I see that tweet. I'll click the little heart button. Some of you, I might even click the retweet button if your tweet is interesting. I've never started the podcast in this way. Well, I have, if by this way we're talking about nonsensical rubbish. But you know what I mean. What other news do I have? Let me have a little sip of the coffee. New music. I released some new music about a week ago. The Promise of a New Life, a new EP by yours truly, being me, Dan Lessac. On my Bandcamp only, again. So The Death of Me and Promise of a New Life exclusive to Bandcamp. Purely because there's no benefit to me putting them on Spotify. I will eventually, one day. It's very good. More left field tape looping. Harder drums this time, guys. Harder drums. You know, you can take the drums out of the boy, but you can't take the boy out of the drums. That well-known phrase. Who's our guest this week, Dan? Let's get on with it, shall we? I'm tired of you, Dan. I'm sick of your rambling. Our guest this week is the wondrous, the legendary, the owner of The Remedy, John Kennedy. He has The Remedy, apparently. I'm not sure what the affliction is, but John has The Remedy for it and is holding you to ransom. No, radio host, promoter, writer, just all-round good egg, as they say. He's on the Radio X, or XFM, as it was once known. Has the Exposure Show, which is a completely unplaylisted show, which is a rarity in modern radio. He can play what he wants, literally whatever he wants. You know, if you're listening, John, how about a bit of a ear? Was that what they were called? You know, Spaceman 3, Sonic Boom. One of them went off and just did stuff with, like, speaking spells. Experimental Audio Research. Maybe that's what it was called. He could play that if he wanted, guys. He could play that. He can play Sun, but he can also play Laura Marling. Or, Little Sims. He could play Little Sims if he wanted. He could do that. He could drop some Stormzy. You know, he can do whatever he likes. He's free.
I think he's got some blackmail material on the owners of his radio station. I don't know, but maybe. Maybe that's how he does it. But if you don't know who he is, listen to his show, obviously. That's one way of finding out. But he's the person who played Thou Shalt Always Kill, the hit that started mine and Scroobius Pip's careers. And without John playing it, maybe Rob DeBank doesn't play it, or Zane Lowe doesn't play it. And maybe we don't get any gigs, and maybe we don't get signed, and maybe we don't release Angles, or Logic of Chance, or I release Space Between the Words, or the awesome Repent, Replenish, Repeat. Maybe Pip doesn't release Distraction Pieces, and I don't release the unreleased EP, or Cherished Overthrown, or 63 Days, or the Subsurface Circular soundtrack, or the Quarantine Circular soundtrack, or The Death of Me, or The Promise of a New Life. Maybe none of those things ever happen without John playing that song. Or maybe Pip never launches the Distraction Pieces podcast, which some of you might have heard. I'm not sure how popular it is. I think he's only got like 16 million downloads or something. So, you know, still just a little indie starting out in the podcast game is our Pip. But yeah, luck. John picking up that CD and going, yeah, I'm going to listen to that. And then hearing it and going, yeah, I'm going to play that, is pretty damn rad. And it can't be understated that luck plays a huge part in anyone's careers. Or obviously, it was an awesome song. You know, we got some of the luck out of the way by being supremely talented individuals. That's for my mum. But yeah, this is a long intro. I just looked down. We're already on 7 minutes. It'll be less when I edit it. But yeah, John's a legend. I do have a lot of time for him. And it was just lovely to get to sit down to him and just have a bit of a natter about the radio game. I don't know why I put on a northern accent sometimes, especially a bad northern accent like that. But I do it. It's a tick at this point. Oh, yeah, a couple of notes. We recorded this in a Radio X studio with their like professional radio microphones and the compression and such that goes with it. I think I've said everything I need to say. I'm moving my hand in a strange way. You can't see it, but I'm hoping you can hear it in my voice. Anyway, yes, do that. Share it. Do the thing. Do the stuff. Really good podcast. Is that an intro? I think it is. Oh, yes. And the last 10 minutes are literally me talking about Stu from Hardcore Listing, Pod Bible, and the Off the Beat and Track podcast, because he deserves to be talked about. He's an important bloke to me and mine, to my people, us Essex boys. But yeah, sorry about that. It just came up.
The music on this podcast can be found at danlesac.bandcamp.com. And if you were to purchase some of the ambient twerks or trip-hop bangers from danlesac.bandcamp.com, you'd be directly supporting this podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we're rolling.
Oh, we're rolling.
I'll
hit rolling on that one. Well, so we're now rolling.
I don't need headphones, do I?
We don't. No. That's the thing. Like, people doing radio interviews, a few times in my life, people have looked at me funny because I haven't put the headphones on. It's like, I can hear you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't.
But there's something about them that is reassuring that it's actually going through the microphone.
True, true. I do usually put one earbud in to the recorder.
Yeah, to monitor.
To monitor.
Yeah.
But listeners, today you've got radio technology. Our voices are being recorded by the radio, I think. I'm not sure how that works.
But we're using into a computer, Dan.
Into a computer, digital.
That is in a radio studio.
I suppose this little recorder that we usually use is a computer in a way.
Yeah.
But this is like a professional computer.
Yeah, well, it's just a slight. I mean, the main difference, I think, is not necessarily the computer itself, but the processing that gets put on the microphone I'm speaking into directly.
But that's a big thing with radio in general, because it squishes stuff, so things aren't too quiet, aren't too loud.
Yeah.
But I find it really interesting, because when I had our first songs out, as soon as I heard it on radio, I was like, oh, it's wrong. It's wrong. I've got to change that. All that drum's too loud. Oh, and then I realised,
It doesn't matter, but it does make a difference. So that's something. That's the kind of conversation I have with Chris Denman, who's the producer and engineer of our sessions here at Radio X and XFM, and has been for many, many years. And he would say, oh, well, when I record the sessions, you know, I put a certain kind of compression on them for radio. And then at one time we had this this album of session tracks put out for Record Store Day, and as we were going through the process of getting all the tracks ready, he kind of put his hand up and said, you do know that they'll need to be processed in a different way for the record.
For the record, yeah.
And you know, someone along the line said, do they? No.
Yeah.
And so luckily he spoke up. But it's interesting how these different processes, and similarly, podcasting has really challenged radio people about how they go about their business. So all the studios here in this big building, which has lots of different radio stations in it, be it Classic FM or LBC or Capital, that all the microphones have different processes put on them to create different kind of sound and be appropriate and correct for that station that they're going to be used on. And but podcasters don't bother about any of that. And it's a more intimate listening experience, usually done on headphones. So you don't necessarily need to put all that processing through.
And weirdly, like, sometimes when you hear one recorded like this, it might sound a little dry.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing breaking it up. Like, we'll probably talk for an hour or so. And maybe a bit of background noise, the odd chair squeak or whatever is actually beneficial to make the listener feel
more interesting
in the room.
So you're doing a double record. We're recording this through the studio microphones, and you've got your Zoom.
Yeah, so normally I would have mics plugged into the Zoom pointed at us, but I don't have to today.
Yeah.
So you're providing the pointy mics, and I'm providing the one catching the air around us.
The ambience.
It is, you bring up podcasts, like, free media is doing a lot to challenge, I don't want to say mainstream media, but corporate media as such. And I would include BBC in corporate. They are a corporation, I suppose. But I find it really interesting what, like, there's a YouTuber I watch called Look Mum No Computer, previous guest of the podcast. and he is an electrician, essentially, but you like his music. You would definitely like his music. He made an organ out of Furbies, and he made a pipe organ that was also a flamethrower.
Wow.
You know, but he builds all these things and then makes music with them. And there's no TV channel going to give him that, but each week he has his 30-minute show he makes with, I don't know, he's made a synth out of multiple Game Boys, so it's polyphonic, and it's insane wall of Game Boys. But no channel's paying for that, but hundreds of thousands of people are watching him.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is interesting that there's things that can only exist because of free media, but might actually, I'm not saying the Beeb should give Look Mum No Computer a TV show, but like could exist in they have the numbers as such.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you feel like, is that free media affecting, other than the way it sounds, but affecting the way your job works? Like,
Yes and no. So personally, it hasn't affected me yet. It could directly in terms of what I do, but it could affect me in terms of how bands get their recordings out there. And that is really exciting. It's another way that you can stumble upon people's music. I would say that in some ways, stations like the BBC have tried to tap into YouTube popularity. They've brought presenters from different YouTube shows onto the radio, particularly on Radio 1. Mm. So that, you know, that's a way of finding new presenting talent is through looking at what's popular. Mm. So maybe Look Ma No Computer will get a show. You know, maybe he deserves
Hopefully.
One.
He was on BBC Click the other day.
Right.
So, you know, he's making it.
Yeah.
But what we should do really is say who you are.
Yeah, first. That would be handy. Well, it may be.
No, I've got a long way into I a think podcast you've got before a
plan.
Asking.
No, I'm assuming you've got a plan to what you're doing.
My first question is what do? That's what I wrote down. So you're John Kennedy.
I am. My name is John Kennedy.
And what do you do?
I am a radio presenter, a DJ, a producer, depending on what term describes it. So I present a show called Exposure on a station called Radio X. The show itself is now into its 21st year.
21. From the inception, essentially.
Yeah, so Exposure started as a radio show in February 1999.
And 99. Now, so that's like, what, 2 years after? Is that 2 years after XFM went legit?
Yeah, so XFM won a license came on air as a legitimate station in September 97. And I was there anyway.
You had been involved from...
Yeah. So I was there from the inception of XFM. But it took us 5 years to campaign to get a license. And finally we got a license and we came on air in September 97. A year after that... we were sold on to Capital Radio, who were the biggest commercial radio organisation at that time in Britain. And there was a big change in the operation.
Well, we had a weird 3 weeks of XFM just playing this sort of 3-hour loop while the transition happened.
Yeah, there was...
really odd.
Yeah, it was really odd. And they kept me on, but they had playlisted the... station 24/7 apart from one show, which was Bob Geldof's show. And Bob was signed up for 149 days because but I think it was 149, maybe it's 1049. I'm sure it's just 149 because the frequency was 104.9. And so his show was a drive time show and he could kind of do what he liked.
Yeah.
Everybody else had to adhere to this playlist. But the weird thing was that there was a backlash to this. And there were demonstrations outside the building. A brick was thrown through the window of the building. Yeah, so there's quite a vocal opposition. And the owners listened. And within 3 months, three or 4 months, I started doing a show once a week, which was Exposure, where I had freedom to do what I wanted. And then that turned into 5 nights a week. And you know, so they reacted in a positive way. Mm. To what had happened quite...
It was interesting because obviously I grew up in Essex, so we caught, you know, when XFM was like the limited radio... what are they called? Limited radio license?
Yeah, so we did a series of RSLs, restricted service licenses.
But they became... Because they were happening while I was still at school.
Yeah.
And then the early days of college. And it was like, they were little mythical times. Oh, XFM's on this weekend or this month or whatever. Yeah. And it was like, oh... And they became a weird hype thing. And then when we finally got full XFM, and then we only got you for a year, and it was this very frustrating thing. By that point, I was working in Lakeside by that point.
Right.
And it was...
In HMV.
In HMV. Yeah. That might have been Gap. I get confused. I worked in so many retailers.
Right.
I did the Gap. I've done the Virgin Media, the Virgin Megastore.
Right.
and HMV. Actually, I've only done three.
Yeah.
I thought I did loads more than that. But
that's a lot still
of,
good going.
I've done a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
I worked in the hospital laundry for a while. That was a delightful summer.
Sounds interesting.
They were really nice people.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, because that was the year before I went to uni, and they made me this amazing hamper of, like, food people from Basildon eat. So some good stuff in there.
Fantastic. What, to take with you to
take
university?
With me to uni. So that first, like, 2 months, I was good for Tinder.
They thought you couldn't get food where you were going.
I just think they were kind, John.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant.
And also didn't trust me to get food. That was part of it. It is interesting, though, how... So a big corporate entity comes in and basically fucks it up and then realises they fucked it up. Because often you see companies come along and say, no, this is the way to do it, and then just that's it, the blanket, until whatever they've taken over dies. And as much grief as... Who was it then? It was Capital.
Yeah, so Capital owned it.
And then Global.
And then, you know, that company changed its name. It became GCAP Media.
GCAP, that's
and
it.
Then, you know, so the ownership has changed over the years for XFM, which is now Radio X, which was rebranded a few years ago.
Mm.
But it's pretty much stayed the same. But the weird thing is, during all that time, once Exposure started, the show that I do has remained the same.
Mm.
You know? And you know, I guess the idea of the show is to play new music and find new bands.
Yeah.
And hopefully some of them will trickle down into the daytime playlists. And yeah, it's really exciting to get to meet lots of exciting new bands. But also, as it's gone on, there's been different interview type features which have developed where I get to speak to older or more successful or more established people, you know, which is always interesting. And basically, if I am interested and I think, well, surely somebody else might be interested. So I'm going to talk to the boss of Elektra Records or whatever. It doesn't matter if he's an octogenarian. It's all good. You know.
And I suppose if you're pre-recording and it's shit, you can just edit it.
Yeah, no, that's true. There is that. But I do pre-record quite a few interviews, but I do like to get people on live because it saves a lot of hassle.
Okay, I think it, from being the guest on live radio, it just makes for... There's a little bit of energy going on. It's a little bit tense.
Yeah.
You know, you could go... You know, you become really aware that you can't swear and stuff. But I think that awareness of don't swear means that you shut down other bits and
right,
say, maybe you're a bit more honest because you're concentrating on this thing over here that's leaving you open. And I don't know, I've always found it a pretty just fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Have you ever had live go wrong? Like,
in all sorts of ways. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, that can be something that you do or it can be something that is beyond you. I mean, only last week we had a situation here where whatever needed to talk to the transmitter wasn't talking to them properly or wasn't doing it quick enough. And about, well, at least six, if not all the stations broadcasting from this building all went off. ours went...
I didn't know.
Yeah, it was really weird. Ours went into the kind of backup tape, I think, is at the transmitter pretty quickly. And I'm not sure if all the others did or not. My show was off air for about 15, 20 minutes. Mm. But that was nothing I could do. And there's literally nothing. But what I could do was that when I heard the backup tape music stop, I thought, oh, well, we must be back on air. So then I pressed play and we could carry on as we were. But, I mean, other things go wrong. I mean, you know, things... People swear and that's bad.
Swearing's bad.
Yeah, but you kind of apologise. That's the general rule. But other things can go... You know, I'm trying to think of disasters.
You've never really had guests behave too unwieldy?
Not too. I mean, sometimes people go drunk when they come on, then they're worried or excited and they have a few drinks.
But you're on in the evening as well.
Yeah, I'm
so you got
in the evening, yeah.
And you get here a bit early and you can go into the crappy Witherspoons.
Yeah.
Which is gargantuan. It goes all the way through the building.
It is. Have you just been in there?
Yeah, no, I've not been in there for some time.
Right, right.
I've been in there.
Yeah,
yeah. and got lost.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you, yeah. I mean, they're different things. I'm trying to think what, I mean, the worst thing is to take the station off air. But I don't think I've ever done that. But there have been things where just equipment fails, you know, a machine doesn't work. I mean, a lot of, I guess one of the most, ongoing problems would be that, particularly for me, because I play a lot of music from my laptop these days, and I've got too much music on there, and sometimes, you know, they go all slow and they can't do anything. It's like, why isn't it working? So then you have to talk nonsense for a few minutes in the hope that it will work. Or then, I mean, luckily we're in commercial radio, so we can go into an ad break.
Yeah.
An option. It's like, oh, nothing's working. Let's go into the ad break. No, there, so there's lots of stupid things like that.
I find that funny, though. Like, you've got all this technology in front of you, multiple screens, and you're still, like, banging it in from your laptop.
Yeah. Well, like, it's the quickest way. Yeah. But then the other computers can freeze and go wrong, and that happens, too. I mean, that, you know...
well, it's funny, when you walk in the building, like, as you approach any studios, there's always these huge servers outside and stuff. And I think, I don't know, I think it's easy to forget that how technological it is to get this stuff out there, because it's not just transmitting radio waves. It's got to be whacked on the internet for live streaming and then backed up for this. And it's fascinating to me how much investment must go into commercial radio, keeping any radio on the air.
Yeah. Well, this is it. Yeah, and the other costs are, of course, if you are playing music, you have to pay for the music that you play. And that there are rules and regulations about that. There are rates that have to be adhered to. And that's one of the reasons why, say, when the internet radio explosion happened, it died quite quickly, because normal radio rules were applied to it. And once the authorities realized what was going on, they thought, oh, well, you're a radio station. Right. Well, if you're going to be a radio station, these are the rates you have to pay to play music. And then it's like, oh, but we're not earning any money, not making any money. Yeah. So we can't do this. We'll just close down.
At this point, I think internet radio rates work out to be about a tenth of Spotify per listener per song.
A tenth of Spotify? Is it not?
Essentially, yeah.
Does it not work?
So it's less.
Play on my show, it costs about 20 quid or something.
But yeah, so, but there's an assumption of your audience. So with the internet radio stations now, they make them track the amount of listeners. So if you're really successful, it costs you more. So it's per person.
So this is, what bodies are governing? These are normal internet radio streaming services.
Pandora in the States and stuff. So any service where you can't...
We don't really have any of those over here, do we?
Not really. SoundCloud try to do their stuff that way. Is it SoundCloud? Yeah. That's the orange one.
Yeah.
For some reason, I haven't said their name in so long. I was like, oh, wait, since they were good.
I still use them.
You still use them, yeah. Mm. But do you ever use them without being given the song link first?
No. Generally, but having said that, sometimes when I've been given a link and I've listened to one song and I don't do anything with it and let it carry on playing, I have been introduced to other music. I've been pleasantly surprised. Be like, oh, who are these? These sound great.
It's a funny thing, because obviously they pivoted from being just a hosting platform. And then they tried to be a bit more of a music community. They had little community pages where for ambient or whatever. And then they decided to get rid of all that. And then we're going to do subscriptions. And then everyone was like, okay, we're still just going to put copyrighted music up and make you take it down. I think they struggled a lot from that era of record labels realizing, oh, wait, there is things we can do about this.
Yeah.
Whether that be DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or just actually getting it pulled down altogether. It's strange. Like, the technology of everything moves way faster than the law of it.
Oh, yeah, well, totally. Because, I mean, with regard to normal streaming services, I mean, my theory is that they're a result of the rules that existed before that were applied to radio stations. Mm. When internet radio stations realized, oh, no, because we're a radio station, we should honor these, and we're subject to all this this money that we've got to pay out. So a way around that was just to play the music and you know, you're streaming it and to redefine that this isn't a radio station. Mm. So those old rules don't apply to us. So we don't need to pay, you know, £50 a play for every track at all. You know, we just do it on a tiny percentage of however many people are subscribing, etc. And so I think that was a clever way of getting past those rules. Yeah. And it seems to me, with streaming, it's a bit like the record industry was back in the 1920s or 1910. So it was a very, very new thing. And people were trying to flog equipment. So they went round to somebody around the corner and said, oh, you know, can we record your song? We'll give buy you a coffee or whatever. And then they got the recording, then they sold their gramophone player and, you know, it carried on like that. And similarly, you know, you had the iPod and sold the iPod and then, you know, the streaming service. So it's kind of the record industry, the music industry, the artists are catching up with how to regulate that.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, they will catch up, but it's going to take a long time. And it seems like that to me, that's my interpretation of it. Because it took 70, 80 years to get to the point where artists started to get paid to be recording artists, get paid when they got played.
Probably apocryphal, but I'm sure this is one of the early Stones albums where they're on equivalent of a percent each of the royalty, something from just bad early contracts sort of thing. Or their initial contract was that way. It might be the Stones.
Small Faces were definitely
on a terrible contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's definitely...
This is a meandering conversation, Dan.
There's no structure. There's no structure, John.
I'm worried that we'll end up giving lots of people misinformation.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine, guys.
General statements about...
You're probably listening to this on a device of some form.
Yeah.
So just Google what the internet radio rates are for correct ones, because we're probably wrong. Google what the Rolling Stones' first contract deal was like. I bet it was bad now.
Yeah.
I bet it is really bad, but Jagger's listening. He Googles it, finds out how bad it is. Huge lawsuit. Maybe we've inspired...
I'm sure he's probably sorted that out already, hasn't
he? Do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon.
I don't know.
He's quite an astute person.
Is he?
Well, my impression is, that he is very astute.
I find... I watched a documentary about the Rolling Stones, and it was just like about fans and all this. And there was a guy who just follows Jagger and guitar man.
Keith Richards
around. And he just has guitars, but he buys and he gets them to sign them. But he buys the shittest guitars. So he'll buy, not even like Squire Stratocasters, like proper knockoff cheap and get. There's twice in this documentary he gets Keith Richards to sign him. And the first time, he just signs it. The second time, he's just like, I'm not signing that.
Right.
I wouldn't even touch that.
Yeah.
Just walks off.
Oh, that's good.
It's like, if you're going to get him to sign it, at least have like a nice guitar.
But I think definitely for these really, really famous people, they do have to think about what they're signing and who they're signing for. Because there are lots of people who just follow them around and try and get umpteen signatures that they then sell on.
I was in someone's house recently and they had a fairly average, like, Telecaster knockoff signed by Peter Hook. And it was like, he's a bassist. Like, why are you getting him to sign a guitar? He was in like a case and
That is interesting. Maybe it's the only one they had.
Maybe.
Or something. I don't know. It's just the idea that you meet somebody, your idol, and you get them to sign the toilet paper you've just, you know.
I would rather buy that though, because at least it wasn't planned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So radio, that's where we started. Where were you before XFM?
XFM, I worked at the BBC.
In archivey stuff?
In the BBC Gramophone Library.
Okay.
Which is where I worked.
The lending library.
Yeah,
the
lending library. So, I mean, I don't know what it's like now. I know it kind of still vaguely exists. But so at the time, I started there in the late 1980s. Mm. Was it 1980s or maybe it was 1990? Maybe it was 1989. Yeah, something like that. And so obviously This is a long time ago.
You're only 30 now, John. Yeah, well, you've just let us know time travel exists.
It's amazing what happens if you eat the right things. So obviously everything was very different. So if you were making a programme on the BBC...
I just realised you're a vampire. I've only ever seen you at night. You haven't aged a day.
I'm sure we saw each other in daylight at a festival once.
Maybe. You had a lot of sunblock on that.
But, yeah, so at the time, this was a central library. So basically, if to rewind further, when... the BBC started broadcasting, there were only two or three record labels. Mm. So not to be seen to be under the influence of any of those, they had a policy whereby any music that they were going to play from gramophone record, they would buy themselves. So that was the principle behind the library. So then they would have this library whereby everybody in the BBC who wanted to use a certain piece of music could come to the library and borrow it and play it on the radio.
And they would have, like, multiple copies.
Yeah, so that's it, just it. So we would lend to BBC local radio around the whole of the country. Radios 1, 2, 3 and 4, 5 was just invented when I was joining there, and to TV as well. So, you know, people would be, say if you're researching a programme on Essex and you want to find Essex-related music, you might go to the BBC Gramophone Library and do your research there and come away with a few hundred related recordings or something like that.
So how it was organised in a way that where you could do that?
So there were all these departments within the library. So there was a cataloguing department. So everything that was bought, one copy was sent temporarily to the cataloguing department so that they would write down record label, record number, but all the details about the songwriters, subjects on the songs, all this kind of stuff. So it could all be cross-referenced by card, so that if you were looking up love, you could find a load of cross-referenced songs to do with love and compile your programme about love. No, and it's pretty amazing. So then you'd have another department, which was issues, where you'd go in and borrow stuff and it'd be issued to you. And then you'd have another department, which was orders, which would go and buy the records and CDs.
I've heard of this new popular beat combo. Yeah,
this is it. And you get.
I think we should get some.
Yeah, and then you might order things that were being specifically requested that weren't in the library. So, and I ended up in the orders office. So my job was to buy the music for the library, and we would buy multiple copies. So, say if Madonna put out a new album, we'd buy 40 copies of that.
You've got to have a load.
It was a really great job in that I just used to go and order these records and then listen to them all day while I was doing that, It was a really great kind of fantastic dead-end job, because the clever thing to do at the BBC is to get any job there and then work out what area you would like to work in and somehow keep climbing various different ladders, like snakes and ladders, until you get to the bit that you want to live in.
I talked to someone at BBC Berkshire recently who literally that is their, I'm not going to say their name, but that's their goal. That they've gone in, they've taken a job that maybe they don't want, but they know that if they just do it right and they can move and shift.
I mean, it's competitive and it's quite tough, really, because the BBC is a very big organisation with a lot of people and a lot of protocol. So you've got thousands and thousands of people often applying for ultimately one position, and you've got to kind of fight them off. It's very tricky. I was there for quite a few years and at the BBC, but I got into radio just before I joined the BBC. I kind of got this radio experience. So I'd started DJing when I was at university, which was in Norwich. I was originally from London, went to University of East Anglia in Norwich and started a club night with a friend, and I also started writing.
Where was that? Where was the club night?
It was at a place called Samantha's.
Hoping it was somewhere I've been in
it does it even exist? I don't know whether it exists anymore. But, and I did a few different DJ things there and came back to London and thought I'd like to work in some relation to music. I couldn't work out. I was so kind of stupid that I didn't think of, like, well, I could get a job at a record label, or how do you get a job? I didn't really work that one out. But I got on a course for the unemployed, a media course for the unemployed, which was run by community service volunteers. And that was a three-month course, and it was based at a cable radio station in Thamesmead, which on the outskirts of
South East London. By cable, like literally through a cable box?
Yes. So Thamesmead is a great big housing estate built in the 1970s or late 60s.
Okay, so that would have been one of the test areas for cable as well.
Yeah, and it was a different kind of cable thing. So every flat and every house had a little box on the wall where you would put your aerial in, and you could get your what then became four channels through that, and then there was one or maybe two extra channels. One of which was meant to be for a local radio station.
And that was
Radio Thamesmead. And so there was this little radio station that broadcast via cable to the Thamesmead housing estate. It was a really strange kind of thing. And so this course for the unemployed was to give you media training. And the idea was that it would be for a variety of people. So you had long-term unemployed who might be in their 50s. You would have teenagers on the course who were straight out of school. Mm. And then there were a few people who were graduates who were trying to find some kind of experience or direction.
Yeah.
And I fell into that category. And because I'd been DJing, I suggested, hey, why don't you let me do a radio show? And so I did this radio show once a week. And then that cable radio station decided to apply for an FM license when there was a big opportunity for FM licenses in 1990 as a response to the surge in pirate radio in the late 80s.
Hmm.
And there were so many pirate radio stations, the government were put in a position where they felt they should do something about it. And instead of shutting them down all the time, they thought, well, no, well, let's create an opportunity for a few new radio stations to exist. And so that's... happened, and there were different community licenses, and Radio Thamesmead applied for one of those, and it won one of those licenses, and then I carried on broadcasting there once a week while I was working at the BBC. So, and then that's when XFM started within that time.
Yeah,
and because I was doing that, because the BBC seemed like a good place. I know I do radio, and I should join the BBC, and then I'll work my way up. But instead, I didn't, and. I
loved the, especially because pirate radio was still kicking well into the 90s. And, well, it still is now.
Yeah, it still is now.
You literally, if you're driving around the M25 and you press the scan button on your radio, you will find some gems. And they don't have like names of the station, it's just a mobile number. Just rotating.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's
like,
what do you want me to do with this mobile number? I like the jungle. Thanks. Play some more jungle.
This is for Dan.
This is for Dan in his Volkswagen Polo. Yes, I drive a Volkswagen Polo. It's red. Thanks. but, like, it's something about... I think maybe because the BBC maybe not had a chokehold on radio, but obviously we've got this big organization for our media over here, and maybe at times they didn't leave quite the room that maybe somewhere in America, where if you could commercially prove that you could make money, you could play whatever you liked. And obviously in the States you've got traditional radio, then you've got the satellite radio network, which is essentially DAB, but 20 years before we had DAB, so that's where your Howard Sterns and all that, and then you've got college radio. And for me, pirate radio was kind of our equivalent of college radio, but generally jungle. If all
well, it depends on your era, because of course pirate radio was in the 60s, and
true.
You know, that played all the big hits,
Radio Caroline,
Caroline, and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, and in a way, you know, pirate radio, if you look back, was used as a tool to demonstrate need, and you know, because Radio 1 was a response, that, you know, the creation of Radio 1 was a response to pirate radio, and the expansion of the BBC in radio terms was a response to pirate radio. So, you know, pirate radio would often exist to fill a gap that wasn't being catered for, and then sometimes if that gap was acknowledged, then that would have a knock-on effect. And so KISS was a response to the dance music explosion in the 80s. You know, in that whole culture.
And KISS was a huge, like, organisation as such before it went legit.
Yeah.
It wasn't just them in a dodgy flat, you know.
No, well, I'm sure it was a bit, but
a
bit. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It still felt like, but when you see photos of the station. It still felt like a radio station. It wasn't, you know, people broadcasting with a biscuit tin FM receiver.
Yeah, but they were one of the people who got the license in 1990 alongside RTM Radio and Choice FM and a whole variety of different stations around London, also in different parts of the country.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a really interesting period.
I mean, there's probably a book in it.
There is a book, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone's written a book.
Someone's written a book about everything.
Yeah. I think there's room for another book. Maybe I'm tempted to write the book.
You can write as well. You've done writing. I've read you do writing in the Dazed.
Dazed and Confused, yes. But the 150-word or 200-word column is not a book.
But if you wrote 150-word or 200 words a day...
Yeah, I like what you're saying.
By the end of time,
yeah,
you would have a lot of books.
Yeah.
Multiple books, you know.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe your writing would get faster as well because you're more practiced.
Yeah,
you doesn't have to think about what the words are. There's probably some words that are shorter that mean more. Yes. Just write really clear sentences. Oh, it's 10,000 words.
Yeah, I've done it.
You've just written the word A 10,000 times and it's 10,000 words. It's a meaningful A. So, obviously, you grew up in London.
Yeah.
Do you feel like London has given you a head start? Like, because it gives you access to the BBC, it gives you access to eventually getting to hear and stuff. But also, I suppose, it gave you access to gigs that...
Yeah, totally. Well, my music interest was definitely fueled by living in London or being on the outskirts of London.
You've done Stu's podcasts, all of Stu's 800 different podcasts.
I'm trying to get on all the Distraction Pieces. Is it Distraction Pieces? Is that
the Distraction Pieces Network?
Yeah, I'm trying to get on all the Distraction Pieces Network. I haven't done it all.
But, yeah, so you got to.
But you're, you know, another.
You got to do more drugs. For Jason and Susie, obviously, they're a bit drugsy.
Right.
But yeah, it would work.
Yeah,
it
maybe. Work. I don't know. I've got so few drug experiences that.
But maybe that's what you talk about.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
You just tell me more.
Yeah.
Tempt me. Tempt me, guys. And Brett does movies.
Right.
So I can't do that one.
Yeah. Why not?
I don't remember movies.
Right.
I remember Fifth Element. That's a great movie. But like, they talk about them with like meaningfulness and stuff. And I'm like, no, it's good. I can't. Right. I've never been able to engage. I love movies.
I find that fascinating because I was quite into films. It's not that I'm not into films. I just don't seem to get the time to either go to see that many films or bone up on that knowledge. But definitely when I was a student and stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
I've watched stuff with subtitles and that. I've done all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I lack the language with movies. Like I can tell that I'm seeing something artful or creative or something different, but I don't know how to express the thing. And then I'll see someone say what I'm thinking, and then I'll just end up quoting them for the rest of my life.
But that's...
It's just...
That's all anybody else is doing. It's a bit like with music or with gaming, which you're into. Mm. You know, you just seep yourself in it for a bit, pick up a few key terms, and then you just regurgitate.
Just run with that.
And then, you know, it's probably the same with every field. You know, be it plumbing... Or politics. You just see
politics is definitely the one. Watch any Boris crony after the election will use level up. We're going to level up the UK. He used it so many times during the election that like every single MP that came in from the Conservative Party now can't not say it. Well, yes, we're going to level up the UK. It's like, guys, we heard. Think of your own one.
Yeah, it's frightening how a lot of that language seeps into your own everyday life. I found myself after Christmas, so New Year, things. You know, you kind of. I didn't really have any resolutions, but you kind of New Year. You kind of fire up, think you're going to have a new approach, and I discovered that everything. Right, loads of chocolate given over Christmas. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to eat all that chocolate. Everything I did was get it done. So it was a good excuse. No, I've got to get it done. So. Now I'm using that every day
I use get it done, but if I'm with Andrea and she says I'm going to the loo, I just get it done, girl.
Good
can't help it. Or Boris.
It's important.
He's done all right for himself, isn't he? Do you remember when he's on Have I Got News For You? Who would have thought he'd be Prime Minister?
Well,
it's impressive.
Happening right now.
I've just kind of talked, again, because I don't really structure this very much.
Yeah.
How do you feel, like, radio's evolved so much, and now with DAB and stuff, it's busy. It's busy. There's a lot of stations, and you've got competition from podcasters and streaming platforms. Like, what's the option for radio? Is it that radio has to evolve to compete with those things, or does it become, I don't know, a more pristine version of itself, if you know what I mean?
I think it's quite exciting because in many ways there are many more outlets. And in some ways the term radio is changing and broadening. So really I feel a lot of podcasting is ultimately radio. Using radio technology to get it out there, but the whole idea of it is that it's a kind of version of radio. And because it's become so popular, I think it's having a really interesting effect and impact on traditional radio. And like I was talking about the microphones and all this kind of stuff, I know that in this building, they've had to reassess how they set up microphones because they're also recording podcasts and stuff like that. And if they just have them on the normal radio studio setting, it doesn't quite sit nicely with normal podcasts. And so, you know, it's quite interesting that it can have a reverse effect. But I mean, I think that I listen to a lot of Radio 4 because I listen to an awful lot of music. So in contrast to that, I listen to a lot of speech radio. But and I think in some ways, the advent and popularity of talk podcasts is a new version of Radio 4. And you're getting all these different kinds of editorial approaches, and it's really exciting and really interesting. I mean, some of it is maybe it's kind of not being supervised in any way, and so that's both positive and negative, you know. But
I definitely feel like with Radio 4, because I always do the podcast in person. I don't do any over the...
Over ISDN or over the line or
over the phone.
Yeah, I should say.
That's what you're paying for, Patreons. Me traveling places and having coffee in services and listening to Radio 4. But what I find interesting about Radio 4 is that it feels like a lot of stuff that people, it's like someone would have an idea that, like, Drunk Women Solving Crime, that is a long running podcast. But if they'd been pitched to Radio 4, they'd be like, oh, well, we'll give you 4 episodes, you know.
Yeah.
And it's that thing, like, Radio 4 always feels like the start of an idea, but we can't go any deeper than that. And I find it...
But you could say that's radio in general, because the overheads can be a lot lower. Mm. And this is why podcasting has exploded. It's because you can just buy a small... kit and
or be
suddenly,
like and
suddenly,
buy a giant kit and carry around in a case
but it's reasonably low cost and so you can set yourself up and start making and creating straight away, whereas say, you know, that's why so many comedy things might have started out as a small series on Radio 4 and then when they get a green light from television, suddenly they've got a budget and they can realise these things. Whereas with radio, a lot is left to the imagination, or can be. Mm. And so you can create these worlds without the cost of trying to create sets.
I find it interesting as well. Like, say, The Mighty Boosh, obviously, the first iteration of that Arctic Boosh, obviously it was live stage show, but the radio version wasn't even, like, Radio 4 or whatever, it was local. I think it was
really
one of the London local BBC stations.
Was it on GLR or BBC London?
It was BBC London, but I feel like it was even more, if there's any more smaller than that. But it was on during the football on a Saturday afternoon or something. Wow. So it was like, how that ever took off. But obviously, if it had been a podcast, maybe it would never have got to be the full-on Boosh, because maybe they would have been comfortable enough in there.
Sneeze, Dan.
Do it.
Yeah, sorry.
If you do it right into the mic as well, so everyone can share it, so everyone can enjoy the sneeze.
Just while you were speaking, I was getting this kind of tickly tickly nose thing.
You better not have the coronavirus.
No, I hope I don't.
You better not.
It's funny how, you know, whenever there's any kind of, so, any massive splash of illness, you think, oh God.
I got the swine flu when we had the swine flu.
Wow.
Just before South by Southwest.
Nightmare.
And my doctor was like, yeah, you can't fly. Like, I'm going to South by Southwest, mate. So you can't fly. Like, oh. And he was like, literally, if you go to the airport, they will stop you.
Right.
Because they were using, they use infrared, like temperature cameras and stuff. So see anyone who's got a temperature on the side. So yeah, that was the South by Southwest where Pip just walked around, hanging out with everyone.
Was that after you'd been there
second
once?
Second one. Yeah. We only got to go twice.
Yeah. Right. Did you get to go? No.
I only got to go once.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I remember being there at the same time as you that first time.
Mm. Where we played the Johnny Cash Saw Shack for, was that for Dazed or Clash or one of those?
Right, yeah.
It's very hard to keep up with that festival.
Yeah.
It's rad, but at the same time, it's like, I would rather go to Kendall Calling myself.
I don't know, but the weather is nicer in Austin.
It's very nice.
That time of year.
In Austin.
Yeah.
I would like to go back. We went back there when we did a US tour, like 2008. And it was like November, and it was still lovely.
Right, yeah.
We played the Beauty Bar, and it was delightful.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long after some sort of natural disaster in America, and this couple, her name was Liz Rose. Yeah, I don't think you listen. but, yeah, they had driven up from, like, New Orleans, it probably was. So it was, like, down, up, whichever direction you go. So it was however many hours. And they had no hotel or anything. They just, yeah, we've got no home right now, so we're just going to drive, watch your gig, and then find somewhere to sleep. And it was kind of weird to me that you would do that. But if there is nothing you can do, you might as well have some fun elsewhere.
Yeah, that's I admire their approach.
But America always fascinated me because, like, try to get someone to take a 45-minute tube journey to go to your gig and they'll be annoyed. We've had it before where we say, oh, we're playing Shepherd's Bush Empire. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, you're not going anything out east. Still in London, mate. Like, come on.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You can still just use a travel card.
Yeah.
Get there on your Oyster. It's fine. Yeah, in the States, you'll play New York and someone will go, yeah, oh, we drove up from Philly 3.5 hours or whatever. It's like, all right. And that's not a problem. That's just, they're playing local.
Yeah. it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, we're kind of, we are spoiled over here.
Like trying to get someone to come to Liverpool from Manchester, it's impossible. Why are you not playing Manchester? Because it's literally 1/2 hour down the road, mate.
Yeah.
Very weird. Very entitled, these music fans. Oh, why won't you give it away for free? I'm not bitter, John. I'm not bitter.
Well, you have put out a new EP.
Yeah.
Or just about to, as we speak.
Another one, actually.
Yeah, it's really good.
Got you a gift.
Oh, wow, excellent. Dan's new EP is really good. You should go and get it.
Yeah, you should get it. It'll be out by the time this is out. I won't edit this bit out. This is a cassette, John.
Wow.
And that's the last EP.
Oh, fab.
But then when you turn it over, that's the new EP.
Hey.
Look at that.
That is really
clever.
That is genius.
Although the Death of Me EP is actually about 4 seconds shorter on the tape because it wouldn't quite fit on.
Old school problems.
Yeah. So great. I cut a tiny bit out of the outro. Just to get it done.
Yeah. I like
get it done.
The last one was The Death of Me. We're all getting it done. And then Promise of a New Life. There's positivity.
Yeah.
I like it. It's good. Excellent. Thank you. This is great.
Okay. I would have got
collector's item. And he signed it as well.
I did sign it.
If anybody's listening and they want a signed cassette from Dan Asak, you can start bidding now.
You can.
Or you can just contact Dan.
Or you can wait till Friday, even though this is like after Friday. So you can go back in time and get one of them from my Bandcamp.
There you go. Clever.
There's only 50.
Wow. Amazing.
Only 50. Well, there's actually more. There's actually 55.
Yeah.
But
it's
got
a lovely
five
colour, though.
Give away.
I like the. Is that a sticker?
No, that's printed.
Printed.
That's printed. Wow. That's full body printing,
How
John.
How did you get that done?
a place. I'll let everyone know,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, do.
Down on...
really cool.
In Leon Solent, which is betwixt Southampton and Portsmouth.
Right.
There's a place called Band CDs. You can find them at bandcds.co.uk. I'm not sponsored by them.
Yeah.
But they do all the tapes.
Right.
They do full, like, on body. They do, like, little printing.
Yeah.
But they do the duplication as well.
Right.
And stuff. So I didn't have to sit there,
yeah,
and do it.
Yeah. That's good. That's excellent.
But, yeah. I just, because I watch Pip sell loads of merch all the time, selling his 10 million pairs of sunglasses. And I'm like, I never make merch, so I can't be jealous.
Yeah, so, you have to manufacture it. But then he could be lumbered with a whole load of Inside Out sweatshirts or whatever.
Pip. If he ever gets lumbered, you'll find him on Basildon Market. He'll just be outside, like, Pitsy train station. Well, I'll buy a T-shirt. Only a fiver. He'd do it. He'd do it really well as well.
Yeah.
He could do well as a market trader.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. If any artist could, Pip, definitely. I reckon Dizzy Rascal could do a good line of, like, fruit and veg. I feel like he'd... I think, because Dizzy would have a bit more cheek, and he'd get on with the mums. If it's the mums doing the fruit and veg shopping, obviously dads can do fruit and veg shopping too. I don't want to say it's only mums. But there is a chance that it's going to be the mums. Yeah, I'd buy my fruit and veg off Dizzy Rascal.
Yeah.
You deal with a lot of new music.
I do.
We digressed, but
we've gone to many places already.
We'll keep it in. You deal with a lot of new music, and obviously there's a lot of, say, negativity towards Spotify. Oh, they don't pay enough. Oh, the algorithm. Mm. That algorithm, it is rubbish. I wish I could communicate with it a little better. Like, if you're listening to the Fugees, Ready or Not, and you hit the little heart button, how does it know which bit of that song you like? Is it the Wyclef bit? Is it the Lauryn Hill bit? Mm. Is it the Enya sample? Which bit? You might like it all. That's fair. But if you only like the Enya sample, if that's the bit, it's never going to show you Enya, is it?
Yeah. I don't know.
Or Clan, how it works. Clan Ad. But was that one of those? Yeah,
they're related, aren't they, Enya and Clan Ad?
Are they?
Yeah, they share family members.
Do they?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Enya's the sister of people in Clan Ad.
No.
Yeah.
Didn't know. I'm not.
You've got to know this stuff. I hope I'm right.
I'm not down with the kids. I'm not down with the kids.
But I don't know how Spotify that works, that aspect of it works. But you could ask them.
One day.
Yeah, I know a bloke who works for Spotify. Only inadvertently. But this is, it's worth mentioning in that it's quite funny in that I met him because he used to work in a record shop and I used to buy records off him.
Okay.
He also was in a band and he was in music writing. But these days he works for Spotify. And it's interesting how
Is he still in a band?
No, he doesn't.
Was he a drummer?
I don't know. It's kind of electronic band. So I'm not sure what his specific...
So where I was going then was actually, like, with all that kind of negativity towards those things, how have you noticed any change in, like, new acts, attitudes to the industry? Like, I think it happened at a transitional point where people were becoming more independent. But obviously you've been sat that side of the desk for longer. So you've seen that point where bands were they were hunting for major deals.
Yeah.
To this point now where people are skeptical of everything.
Yeah.
How do you feel new bands are pushing through that?
I think that in many ways it's great because if you write a song and it's pretty good, you've got many more ways of sharing it with people. And that pretty much you can get yourself on Spotify or on iTunes or Deezer just with a bit of investigating about how that works. And
by $9 as well.
So if you release it yourself, you can do it all really quite practically and suddenly you're up there and you can be found. The problem is for people to find you.
Yeah.
But the main change that affects me is more in terms of how people share their music. So I find a lot of people will tell me about their band and send me a Spotify link rather than an MP3 or a WAV or a cassette or a CD. And they'll think, I'll just want to click on their Spotify link and check out their band.
Logically, that makes sense.
It makes complete sense because that's all they use to play their music. Now, I don't trust streaming services for airplay.
I can imagine.
I you know, they need to send me something I can download in order to play it on the radio. I'm still relying on that.
There's probably a law in there as well. There's probably at least something in the end user license agreement on Spotify that says
There probably is. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Why not? But it's a good way of sharing your music around. You know? And I like that seemingly democratic aspect to it, that you can get yourself out there in many ways that you just couldn't before.
It's weirdly, you say democratic. They're usually when you see a grumpier old artist complaining about Spotify, there will always be someone like, well, I democratized music for me, it gave me this opportunity.
Yeah.
That, because there were gatekeepers, especially, let's go two decades ago, you couldn't get your CD on the shelf of a HMV.
And, yeah. Yeah. You
know, Spotify is our digital storefront at this point.
But some of the, so like the old rules would have been, you know, to be racked in HMV, there were different strategies whereby, you know, a distribution company could have
done
a deal and buy some space for their
buy your shelf in the chart. Yeah.
So there's all that. And I don't know how Spotify works in terms of, you know, what's on their front of page, of, you know, the front page and what music gets highlighted and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there must be
iTunes,
some connections.
You could definitely buy your front page.
And but also the record companies, you know, invested in Spotify and other streaming sites. So now it's also part of the bigger record industry.
It's weird, actually, like people forget how interlinked bands are, like by labels and stuff. So, like, if you go into HMV and see like a new album, a newish album, like super cheap, like £3. It's like, oh wow, that's really cheap. And it's partly usually because A, that album failed in some way, but B, there's been a deal done elsewhere that's funding that massive release.
Right, I see. Yeah,
I only know this because there was a point at which the space between the words was £3 in HMV. It was October 2012, which happened to be when I was on tour, so I could keep stocked for the merch table.
Yeah.
£3 a copy as a bargain.
So you bought the cheaper versions from other shops?
If I bought it from the label,
it
cost me £8.
Yeah.
But if I bought it from HMV, it cost me £3. But HMV had already paid the full price.
Yeah.
But they'd done a deal to get something else, yada yada. So the discount they got on, say, I feel like Liam Gallagher, or one of that sort of scale of people, had a record.
Yeah, yeah.
So the deal they'd done on that actually funded making mine cheaper.
Yeah.
Someone from PS, you email me. Tell me how that works.
It's interesting that you had a practical approach and thought, well, this is cheaper than I can get it from the label, so I'll buy these.
I stopped and then up.
That's clever, very clever. Yeah.
I nearly did it again recently, actually, because I noticed our label was selling them cheap on Big Cartel, on their Big Cartel store on the interwebs. So I put in like 20. I thought, I'd get 20. That'd be fine. One day in the future, I'll be able to sell them. But the way they did their shipping, it added £3 per copy.
Oh, wow.
Not like account.
Yeah.
So it didn't work out. This bit might get edited.
Yeah.
This bit's less interesting. But maybe we made it interesting. Do you feel like bands, I don't know, thinking of grumpy people on the internet, do bands who have had success have any responsibility to not make it worse for everyone else?
It all depends. I mean, being grumpy on Twitter is one thing, and putting obstacles in people's way in a different way is another thing.
Yeah, he's not actively trying to stop people succeed.
He's just generally moaning, you know, and that's what a lot of people use Twitter for. But sometimes that can be amusing. Sometimes it can be really tiresome.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, anybody who gets successful at anything is at risk of getting caught up in their own position without realizing it necessarily, and I know, and that's problematic. It's for people coming through, but also maybe for themselves, because maybe they miss out on something that if they were less in their own bubble, they might realize, oh, well, if I, you know, I don't know, they get out of touch.
Mm.
I mean, that's the risk, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely feel that out of touch thing, because obviously my career's changed dramatically, like in scale, particularly, is far smaller than it was with the Dan and Pip days. But it means that I sort of have less time to engage with the music industry stuff, you know, and it is really amazing how quickly you can just lose touch of what the current, I don't know, marketing methods are or whatever. And I can see how someone who was more bitter could take that detachment and get ready. The kids these days, they don't know.
Yeah, but then that would have been, you know, any and every era. Yeah. No.
Can you imagine if, like, we had had Twitter in the 60s? And can you imagine Iggy Pop on Twitter in the 60s? Lou Reed, how boring would his Twitter have been? Like, he'd be...
I don't know. He might have been giving us amazing one-liners.
Come on, it's Lou Reed. Sorry, I don't know why I'm picking on Lou Reed today.
Poor Lou. I think he could have been amazing on Twitter.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he had a wit and wisdom to his use of language that was really great. And I'd have thought, you know, he'd have whittled it down to a few pithy comments that have been pretty funny.
No. I don't know. I feel like he would have got sucked into the complaining about daily life. He'd be stuck in
behind
someone
in the
queue.
But then you see people can get, you know, they did that in ancient Greek times, you know.
True.
So, you know, that's what humans are like.
Yeah, I remember that Plato thing where he's moaning about people in the queue of Starbucks. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Before his time in Plato's Republic. We've done good, John.
Well, we've cut a lot of time. I don't think we've solved the problems of the world yet, Dan.
Oh, okay. Well, you know,
I
mean, what
I was hoping to.
What problems do you want to fix?
We've been recording for an hour on that computer.
Well, so, what do you want to fix, John? What's the biggest problem in the world for you right now?
Oh, don't. I mean, I said I listen to Radio 4 all the time, and one of the downsides of that is that you hear news bulletins every half an hour.
You use news bulletins,
and they're just depressing, aren't they?
They can be very different. My thing with Radio 4 is it's very disconnected radio. I know people listen to it all day, but it doesn't feel like radio that's been designed to be listened to all day.
Yeah.
So we can have, like,
well,
a kind of in-depth news show, then the news bulletins, then the archers, then, like, someone... Then you get, like, a consumer show about, like...
Consumer stuff.
Like,
yeah,
consumer stuff, exactly. But then you'll get like a period, like 80s period drama about the IRA, like, and it's like, oh, yeah. I'm very confused. And the problem with it for me, Radio 4, is if I'm on the motorway and I need to go to the services, I have to then sit in the car park at the services waiting for the drama. I don't want to miss the end of the
story.
Yeah,
there might be some crucial bit.
They did some stuff about George Orwell and his time in Burma and all that. And I listened to those, but all of them, I only ever heard like one part of each documentary. So I was just like, we've got these little snippets into his life.
I hate to do this, but you could catch up with that on the internet.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I've heard of that. I was actually, I realised something when I did a bit of research for this. So I listened to some podcasts with you on. But I listened to the one you did with Pip, episode 50.
Right, yes. Done in this room, actually.
Done in this room.
Yeah, yeah. The room was a different shape.
I can smell it.
Yeah.
I can still smell the beard.
Yeah. But yeah, it was done in this very room.
But it made me realise neither of us listened to our first radio on the radio.
Yeah.
He listened to it on the telly.
Right.
With his mum and I think his brother. And I had to listen to it on my girlfriend at the time.
So this is the first play of Thou Shalt Always Draw, or the second play or whatever.
I think it's the second play.
Because I didn't tell you that I was going to play you. I just played you.
Very rude.
Yeah, I know. I'm not very good at that.
But then, like, that's... I personally, having been an artist, I'm glad that... I'm more excited when I hear something has been played than when you get told, well, so-and-so's got the first play exclusive. It will be this.
Yeah.
Because it all feels a bit too negotiated and all that. And I get why a radio plugger or a label would try to secure something like that. But I don't know, it just feels more honest when it's like someone hears a song and goes, eh, it's good enough. I mean...
Yeah, there's definitely an element of surprise. It's like, oh, wow, is that good?
Let's do it. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, radio, I love radio. I find it really exciting, both being on the radio and listening to the radio.
But do you think you love it? If you were stuck on, like, BBC Sussex with a playlisted show, do you still feel like you'd love it?
No. I pretty much know that I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But that would be a different thing. But in terms of listening to the radio, I listen to a lot of radio.
Mm.
And I like the randomness of it. I mean, we were talking about Radio 4. I love the randomness of that. I mean,
yeah.
It can be quite irritating, but it's also quite exciting. But I also love the randomness of music radio, whereby you hear something you've never heard before, and it blows you away. And you kind of think, wow, to think that I tuned in at this moment to hear this song that is really incredible and really means a lot to me right now. But also there's so much kind of random fate.
Mm.
You know, I'm always amazed by how many people hear things on the radio that it's really random that they got to hear it.
You know,
like their own song maybe played on the radio. They didn't tune in for a particular reason to hear their song, but by chance, they just happened to turn on the radio and their song got played.
I did it. I was driving back from my folks. They live down in Margate now. And I was driving back. I won't stay at their house. They're old people now. They're well into their 70s. It's got a must to the place. I can't sleep there. No offence, Mum and Dad. But I was listening. There was like whatever local, like Ramsgate radio was on. And there was a guy, like, it was just the local. It was almost like a BBC introducing type show. And a guy comes on, sings a couple of songs, da da da. And then they do a little 2-minute interview. So what are you influenced by? And then, oh, yeah, Dallas Sack versus Scrooge Pip. Da, da, da.
Cool.
And whacked us in with Idols. And I was like, all right.
Wow.
We were better than I thought. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, but that for me as well, because that was only a few months ago.
Yeah.
And obviously I've been kind of out of that loop for a long while. So it was kind of like, oh, I remember this feeling.
Yeah.
As I promptly drove off the roads.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but that's great. I mean, you clearly meant
to. I was meant to hear that. Yeah. Yes.
But it's only seen that way. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It's kind of mad.
It is. I still find it. I find it really interesting as a medium, because I think we use radio as background sometimes. It's that thing you just put on. My friend Jake has Radio 4 on all day in his kitchen. He's rarely in his kitchen, but it's just on all day, and it's just this. It's company, but it's how that can. It can be a hell of a lot more than that. It can be enthralling entertainment. When in this era, you would think that the fully visual stuff is what we want, but no, we still like depriving ourselves of certain senses. In a sense, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think people think of it in that way, but
yeah. But then this explosion in listening that has happened through podcasting, I think just reveals the power of radio. And we're only using radio as a term for things that are using sound.
The thing about the podcasting thing, for me, with like a commercial station like this, I think it means that Global or whoever's got the purse strings, it's easier for them. So say I came to Global, to whoever's running Radio X these days, and said, look, I've got this really good idea for a show based around, like, the depth and breadth of video game music. You know, it's not something that's being covered, yet you've got artists like Chipsel selling tens of thousands of records. I don't know, Niamh, if you sell tens of thousands of records, but I have seen your studio. I don't know if she's listened, but she's been a guest. So I assume all guests then listen
religiously every time,
afterwards. But like hugely successful music that isn't covered anywhere by the traditional music setup. But obviously, if you came and tried to do that 10 years ago, it's like, well, we're not giving you 2 hours on a Sunday night to do that.
Yeah.
But, oh, we can you can do it as a podcast and we can see where it goes from there. It's a smaller investment. It's actually a good thing. I don't know.
Oh, totally. But also you can just do it anyway. I mean, that's the other good
thing. True, true. You know, the only problem with it is getting, for podcasts and using music, getting licenses.
Yeah, that's the big issue.
But I think there are a few people out there that kind of do that. I think Mixcloud actually cover all that side of things and do it through advertising.
And there are licenses, but the problem is that everybody's a bit nervous of it. And that's why there aren't many podcasts with music on, because
It's
yet to be really resolved.
No. I think the PRS license is about, I think it's 50 quid every 3 months. If in that 3 months you've got less than 3,000 downloads. And that would be if you only had 10 songs in the podcast. Obviously, the amount of songs changes that. But like, you think about it, it's like, oh, that'd be great for a start. And then you're suddenly successful and it's like you've got a whopping bill and you're not generating.
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it?
You know, and that's the thing. I think there's still something of the older part of the music industry that's trying to protect revenue without realizing that they could be generating more revenue if they were being more helpful.
Yeah.
Like Warner Music, Warner Chappell Publishing, I will call out all day, because they are really aggressive with claiming music on YouTube videos without really looking at what they're claiming. So they'll grab like half of a video's revenue for a 5 second clip, even if the video itself's like an hour long. And really that revenue maybe isn't theirs. Maybe it was fair use in the first place. And maybe that having that there, because the majority of the time what the YouTuber can do is just mute that section of the video, it would be more beneficial. You know, things like, I don't know if you noticed a few years ago, Toto Africa was everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was because of Twitch streamers all using it. They all just, a few people started doing silly things while playing that song and it boomed and they made loads of money. But if the publishers had come along and slapped it and grabbed the revenue, that would have stopped a hell of a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Not that
it would have stopped the snowball that is Toto's Africa.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a good song, John. It's not a good song.
Yeah, well, I've come around to it. I was around when it was first released, and it seemed to represent the opposite of what I thought was exciting. And
I wrote something a few years ago about how, basically, how music from different eras have different chord structures because of the technology. So technology is always, the newest technology is always in music.
Yeah.
But in our popular music. So as soon as synths came along, pop music all got synths, and it's always done this. And like the sounds of the 80s are a particular type of synthesis because of that. But though the limitations, so the synths that Toto wrote on could only play like, I think, 6 notes at a time. So any chords could only be 6 notes. So they could not voice it any more complex than that. So that all the simplicity of it is not because they couldn't play harder, better, complex stuff. It was because it literally just couldn't make any more notes. And I wrote it and it was really interesting to me. And it was the most dry piece of thing ever, because it's just me going, and right, this synth, da-da-da. Weirdly, I found a YouTuber recently who that's all they do. They make these videos talking about different voices and how that came about through technology. I was like, that was way better than what I wrote.
Yeah, sounds great. I mean, that is very much the case, isn't it? You know, it going back through time from the harpsichord to whatever. You know, it's
The piano was
a revolutionary instrument, wasn't it?
Which was it? Mozart, the one who was like a child prodigy, or Beethoven?
Both, but Mozart, yeah. Definitely.
Which was the piano you want, Mozart?
Mozart, yeah.
So the amount of notes on a piano, is his fault. I learned that on Radio 4, actually. He kept writing pieces and feeling limited, and then he'd find piano makers like, I want another octave.
Yeah.
I want 12 more notes. And they would have to work out how to do that, because pianos early on didn't have the metal frame So they just couldn't cope. They would break under all the pressure. So, like, all of the technology that went into pianos, which we don't think of as technological, comes about through composers pushing for more. Needy artists. I think we've covered a lot, John.
Okay. I hope people can get something out of it. I feel we have covered a lot.
We have.
But I don't know whether we've got to the crux of everything, Dan.
We never do, though.
No.
But maybe this is a starting point.
Yes.
And maybe someone listening right now on their way to work has been inspired and they've turned us off a few minutes ago because the thought was burbling, and that person is going to solve, I don't know, hydrogen fuel cells.
Wow.
Or fusion, nuclear fusion. We need to work that one out.
Yeah.
We've got fission down, but that's not good. But fusion, that's the future. That's how you make a sun, I think. I don't know. Physicists, do you want to help me out or let me know?
You know an awful lot of stuff, Dan. I was thinking about jazz fusion, and...
Jazz fusion's good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something I got from listening to you on Stews. You got to see Sun Ra.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
2 days running.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah, I know, that was a bit show-offy. But it was amazing.
You find that difficult, though, don't you? That you've been in this situation where you've got into music early, like preteen, really.
Yeah, kind of 12. Yeah, I mean, not like some people. I mean, some people seem to get into music age 2.
True. You know. But you've kind of stumbled around and ended up going to a lot of rad gigs.
Yeah.
Again, from the Stu podcast I keep mentioning is Off the Beaten Track.
He challenges people. You have to do homework and think about what you're going to do.
I did it early, like episode 5 or something, and yeah, it was difficult. I think I can't even remember all my choices. I think the first emotional song, it was either Atmosphere by Joy Division or Lorraine Ellison, Stay With Me Baby.
Right, yeah.
If you've watched The Boat That Rocked with about Radio Caroline.
Yeah, wow.
Which in America was just called Pirate Radio. There's a scene in that where Irish comedian cries while listening to Lorraine Ellison. It's beautiful, just piano singing, but it's so bad. She just wants him to stay.
Yeah, well, we understand that sentiment.
But yeah, Stu's good.
Oh, he's great.
I've known Stu for decades.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, have you ever played any of Stu's music?
I don't know whether I have, because I know that he was in a band and that Ricky Gervais managed that band, didn't they? Or Ricky got...
Ricky was involved.
Gary and Gary Crowley and got Gary Crowley to...
I think that was Serious Problem.
Yeah.
So that was the comedy band.
Right.
So, Stu Whiffin, guys, on the network, Off the Beaten Track, Hardcore Listening, Pod Bible, all three of those podcasts. I was in a band called Serious Problem. He was also like a promoter back home and stuff. But he was also in another band called Lilo. Next time you see him, if you remember, ask him about Lilo, because they were like good.
Yeah.
They were like good indie rock. They had good songs. The twins in the band were like weird looking twins, which was only beneficial. Really. Do you know what I mean? When the twins aren't quite twins enough and they've both got stupid faces.
Right.
But it was perfect indie band fodder. Yeah. You know how...
Yeah, no, they sound great. I'm excited.
You only want one handsome person in an indie band and you don't want it to be the twins. That would be confusing. But no, Lilo were really good. I've always wondered that, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played Stu's music on the radio. I'm going to have... Yeah, it's a
good idea. Yeah, I don't think Serious Problem would have worked because of all the swearing.
Right. It is a...
I think one of them, so DJ Destruction obviously worked on like Adam F Records and all that. You probably met him at Pip's DJ night thingy, We Are Lizards.
Yeah, maybe.
The scratchy DJ was always there.
Yeah.
That's Ross DJ. So he was doing that. They also had another DJ called Muff Diver. He didn't really do anything. But his brother worked on like Missy Elliott or something.
Wow.
And one of them, one of their guitarists, I think his name was, I might be making this up now, Google it, Jeremy Cakes Bennett? Is that his name? Because it was Jeremy Castle. But there was one of the guitarists who was like a session for The Prodigy, if you remember those guys. you know, the guy with the hair.
I've heard of them. They're quite good.
They had some hits. I think, so yeah, they were like, they all did stuff.
Yeah.
And then Stu promoted club nights and then became a huge podcaster.
Yeah.
A decade later.
This is it. No. I think his importance in the place of cultural history is...
For Essex, he's actually...
It's there.
Do you know what? Like, it's very strange. I think every town has a Stew, or for a period of time at least. You have someone who's there who is just, I'm going to put on a night. I'm going to put on gigs. I'm going to do this. In Reading, I don't actually know the guy's name, but there's a thing called Club Velocity. Been running like 18 years now.
Yeah.
And it's the only consistent local bands going on. You got Dave Moore running the Are You Listening Festival, but Velocity is like week in, week out gigs. But yeah, Stu was that. So people of my generation from Essex, if you say, oh, did you go to the Bullseye? Did you go to the Brush? They know. And Stu's a huge part of why those places exist.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder how the move to the online world, whether those guys get to exist, you know, or do they end up online with a YouTube channel or whatever and not doing something? Obviously, on YouTube, you are doing something in the real world, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then sometimes the YouTubers end up having to put on nights because they want to reflect their success or what they're doing online in another way. And so these nights take off in that way too.
It's something I find funny about like SoundCloud rappers, the amount of times you'll see them like announce a tour and then have to go, oh, we've got to cancel these 10 shows because we can't sell tickets.
Yeah.
Because it's just that like people aren't engaged with the fan in a fan way. They're like, I like this song, but maybe I don't even know who it's by at this point. Like, but it's in my playlist and I've listened to it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah, really interesting.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think...
there's a podcast there. That's all that matters.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. Dan, thank you so much.
Obviously, John F. Kennedy, there's that guy. But do you know about John E. Kennedy?
I don't know John E., no.
John E. Kennedy's the best of the John Kennedys.
Oh, no.
Spence. He worked on The Muppets.
He's
a puppeteer.
Cool.
He played the baby. On Dinosaurs. He did some stuff on Sesame Street. So, you know,
I was unaware of John E. Kennedy. I've been made aware of various different John Kennedys.
I only found about him on the tube. He's not actually that important. I was just trying to find other John Kennedys.
Yeah, there are loads. There are far too many John Kennedys.
It's a popular name.
Yeah, it is. Common as muck.
Very. Let's hang up. Bye, guys.
Okay, bye. Thank you for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Did you enjoy that conversation? If so, smash that subscribe button and drop a scintillating 5-star review. And don't forget, you can support this podcast directly by hopping over to patreon.com/DanLaSac. Enjoy!
Hey, there you go. That's episode 29 done. I haven't actually looked up if it is 29, so maybe there's now two episode 29s. John, I say this every time. I say guest name is a delight. But they are. I wouldn't ask them to come on if they weren't. You know, I'm not going to get an arsehole on. Not on purpose. Like, one day I'm going to walk into a room and the person's a dickhead. But, like, hasn't happened yet. We've been very fortunate. We've been very lucky with our guests. If you're new here, go listen to the older ones. There's some crackers. If you like the Radio X type people, there's Danny Wallace, who is delightful, but also goes by Danny. Like, if your name was David, you shorten it to Dave. That's two syllables down to one syllable. Why Daniel, with two syllables, down to Danny, two syllables? That's not shortening. That's incorrect usage of shortening. But other than that, he's a nice dude. To go back and listen to that, other radio people, we had Matthew Everett of Matt Everett fame from the BBC. Other radio stations are available. He was great as well. So you've got those. And we had Stoya, the pornographer, Syriac, the animator, Chipsel, the musician. We've had all sorts. So go do that. Everyone else, I haven't recorded next week's yet. I'm hoping to do it on Friday? Thursday. Like, in 2 days' time. But they've not confirmed. So we'll see. I have nothing to tell you. Go listen to the new EP. It's very good. Go listen to John's radio show. It's very good. Go do things. I'm not stopping you. You can carry me around with you if you want. You know, I'm in your pocket all the time. Forever, guys. Forever. So tune in next time for more meandering nonsense. Enjoy. I have no clue if I got everything that needed to be said then. Guess I'll find out in the edit.